He rubbed his face with his hands. His bruised eye throbbed in response. It took his son getting into a fight, which Jack had encouraged him to do, for him to notice his son had a life outside of him. He turned to face his brother. Eddie looked like a 20-year-old slacker instead of a 43-year-old loser, though Jack admitted to himself it was a fine distinction.
"What were you doing at the school, Eddie? Did Ethan call you?"
Eddie sniffed, smiled, and shook his head.
"God, you are so predictable, Jack.
As predictable as you driving into my town with a pocket full of drugs."
"Your town? You've been here a week and it's your town?
Did Ethan call you?"
"No."
He swung his leg over his bike and stood.
"I was talking to your girlfriend when Susan called her. Rather hysterical, I think."
"My girlfriend?"
"Ellie. Oh, she's a keeper, by the way."
Jack clenched his fists and tried to keep the anger from his voice.
"What were you doing at Ellie's?"
"Getting to know the locals, playing dominoes, drinking a really good latte, sizing up your girlfriend."
"She isn't my girlfriend."
"Maybe not yet, but she should be. Put me in my place right off the bat. To be honest, she reminds me of Mom."
Jack turned away and ran his hands through his hair.
"Jesus Christ."
He turned back to his brother, put his hands together in prayer on his forehead.
"Please, please stay out of it, okay, Eddie?"
"Hey, I'm not in it. I wanted to introduce myself to her and went to her bookstore. That's it. Chill out, bro."
Jack stepped forward, so he was almost nose to nose with his brother.
"Chill out, bro? God, you've got no fucking idea. The last thing I need is my loser brother coming here and jumping in the middle of my life. It's bad enough I bailed you out last night. I'm sure that's going to come back to haunt me. Then you show up at the school when no one asked you and stuck your nose in that situation. I'll have you know I had that situation under control until you and your big ball of rage burst in. Miss Corsi, could you have been any more insulting?"
"Probably, yeah."
Eddie laughed.
"Your temper is going to get you in trouble, little brother. Again, I can handle my temper, like you did last night."
Jack shoved his hands in his pockets and looked away.
"Look," Eddie said, "I'm not about to tell you how to handle Ethan. You wouldn't listen to me if I did, but I will tell you that the only way he's going to talk to you is if you shelve the anger and talk to him like an adult."
Jack nodded.
"You're right."
Eddie laughed.
"What?"
Jack closed his eyes and pinched the bridge of his nose.
"I keep thinking about last night, how shitty I handled it. Well, kids remember the apology more than the anger."
Jack dropped his hand.
"Where the hell did you hear that?"
Eddie shrugged.
"Some child therapist I was boning a few years ago."
"Oh, God,"
Jack said with a groan.
"All right, what happened at school? Did Ethan explain?"
"Eh,"
Eddie said, shaking his hand in front of him.
"He was lying about most of it. Said the kid whispered something insulting about you and he jumped him."
"Why do you think he was lying about that?"
"You two aren't exactly best buddies these days.
He isn't going to care too much what people say about you."
Jack's stomach clenched at the truth in Eddie's statement.
"Not enough to beat the crap out of them anyway."
"My guess is it's about a girl."
"A girl? Surely you remember being 14.
"Vaguely."
"Well, I remember you waking up every morning with a huge boner. Not as big as mine, of course, but it was a little impressive."
He held his thumb and forefinger a couple of inches apart. Jack walked away.
"Oh, hey?"
He walked back to his brother.
"Stay away from Ellie."
"Why? Afraid she's going to like me more?"
"God, no. I'm afraid she'll be scared off by my batshit insane family."
She doesn't look like the type to be scared too easily."
"That's what I'm counting on."
Jack knocked on Ethan's door and let himself in. Ethan was lying on his bed, staring at the ceiling. Jack followed his eyes to a water stain above the bed.
"What does it look like?"
"If you tilt your head just right, it looks like an F. The puffy kind girls draw," Ethan said.
Jack tilted his head.
I guess I can see that.
Looks like Marilyn to me.
He sat on Ethan's bed.
So, want to tell me what happened?
Aren't you mad?
Jack shrugged.
I can't really be mad when I told you to stick up for yourself last week. You did have a reason for what you did.
Ethan nodded.
Do you want to tell me what it was?
When Ethan blushed, Jack knew Eddie was right. It was about a girl.
It wasn't about me, was it?
Ethan remained silent.
Ethan, you know you can tell me anything. I'm not going to tell anyone, I promise.
Even her?
Ellie? No. At the end of the day, our loyalty is to each other, to family. That's never going to change.
Ethan sighed.
He was saying things about Olivia. Dirty things.
Troy's sister?
Yeah.
From the embarrassment on Ethan's face, Jack knew better than to ask specifics. He could imagine too well.
Did Troy hear?
If he had, Kevin Jackson would be in the hospital.
That bad?
Jack said.
I really don't want it.
No, that's fine. Well, you did the right thing.
Ethan sat up.
Really?
Sticking up for your friends is always the right thing. I wish it hadn't been through fighting.
You told me.
I know. I had no idea you would be so good at it.
Ethan leaned his back against his headboard and pulled a small down feather out of his pillow.
He picked the wrong day to piss me off.
Jack felt a wave of guilt. Kevin Jackson was the victim of Ethan's rage at his father.
I'm sorry about last night, Jack said.
Ethan stopped picking. He looked up slowly, hopefully.
You are?
Yeah, I shouldn't have told you about your mother that way. It was insensitive. I've tried very hard not to let my anger at your mom come across, and I guess the effort of holding it in all these months burst at the wrong time.
Ethan's shoulders slumped.
You're still going to divorce her?
I haven't heard from her in a year. She could be...
He stopped before he said, dead for all I know, but just barely.
But if she came back?
She isn't, Jack replied.
But if she did, you'd give her a chance. You'd let her explain.
How could he tell Ethan of his realizations months ago? The one where he figured out he didn't miss Julie, that any feelings he had for her before she left were from obligation instead of affection. That he had known he had made a mistake only months into his marriage. That he stayed with Julie because it was easy. It was expected of him to make it work. That Julie was a narcissist who only ever did anything with her own best interests in mind. He couldn't tell Ethan any of that. Jack might not love Julie, but she was Ethan's mother.
Sure. I'd let her explain.
10. Mike Freeman lived in a small mid-century craftsman bungalow 2 streets from the high school. It was well-kept but unremarkable, painted white with black shutters and with a concrete front porch flanked by hydrangeas. Freeman's Ford was parked in front of a detached garage behind and to the right of the house. Through the open garage door, Jack could see weight benches, dumbbells, a speed bag, a punching bag, and a treadmill. Jack sat in his darkened car across the street 1 house down and stared at the red Jeep parked behind Freeman's truck, a University of Texas bumper sticker marking it as the same red Jeep Ethan had taken a picture of days before. For an hour he heard the sound of weights, clearly in this quiet neighborhood. There was no traffic, no one walking dogs, no kids playing, just a police officer and the senior varsity quarterback working out. The light in the garage went out and Jack sat up, expecting Seth Kendrick to get in his Jeep and drive off. 10 minutes passed. The Jeep didn't move. The lights in the house didn't turn on. Jack got out of his car. He walked down the sidewalk and past the dark house. A small dog in the house next door barked. Jack turned, walked past Freeman's house again, and went around Seth's Jeep to the cab of Freeman's truck, where he paused. The garage door was closed. Jack saw the freshly mowed backyard, a small charcoal grill, and two canvas lawn chairs. Concrete steps with a metal pipe as a handrail led to the back door, which Jack guessed led to the kitchen. He walked around the front of the truck, past the kitchen door, and paused at the corner of the house. A line of bushes blocked Freeman's house from the yapping dog's house next door. The house was quiet. Jack let out a breath. Freeman didn't have a dog. Jack inched forward to the side window. The room, like the rest of the house, was dark. There was a chink in the drapes, but it wasn't large enough to see anything. The window, however, was open slightly, letting Jack hear everything he needed, and more than he wanted. 30 minutes later, Seth left and Jack went to the door. Any hope Jack had of being wrong evaporated when Mike Freeman answered the door smiling, shirtless, and holding a video game controller. His jeans were low-waisted and unbuttoned. Without his too-small uniform, he looked smaller, well-defined, to be sure, but not the hulking muscle man he appeared in uniform.
"Did you?"
His smile melted into a frown.
"Chief McBride."
"Mike, I wanted to see how you're feeling."
"Better. Can I come in?"
"Of course."
Freeman stepped back, held the door open for Jack, then closed it behind him.
"Well, let me get a shirt on," Freeman said.
"Take your time," Jack said. The living room was sparsely furnished with a 60-inch flat screen on a glass and metal TV stand as the focal point. The television was paused on a first-person shooter game, Medal of Honor or Call of Duty. They all looked the same to Jack. Freeman returned wearing a white T-shirt.
"Assassin's Creed," Freeman explained.
"I like your house," Jack said. He walked over to a bookshelf. Well-worn paperbacks, mostly military fiction Jack had never heard of, self-help books, fitness books, gun manuals, and a few romances on the bottom shelf.
"Thanks. It was my grandmother's. She left it to me."
"Did you grow up here?" Jack removed a book at random and flipped through it.
"No, I visited summers."
He put the book back.
"What did the doctor say?"
"Doctor? Didn't you go today?"
"Oh, no, I think it was food poisoning. I'm feeling better. Afraid to eat anything, though."
"Where did you eat, so I know to stay away from there?"
Jack laughed.
"It was my own cooking," Freeman said.
"Can I get a drink of water?"
"Sure."
Freeman flipped on the kitchen light, walked to the sink, and filled a glass with water. A disassembled handgun, a lint-free scrap of cloth, and gun oil sat on the Formica table.
"Wow, that's an old refrigerator."
"Yeah, it was my grandmother's. It still works, so why not use it?"
"It'll probably last forever," Jack said.
He ran his hand over the curved door.
"Yeah, they don't make them like this anymore."
Freeman handed Jack the glass.
"Thanks,"
Jack said. He drank the iceless water and stared at Mike Freeman over the rim. Any uncertainty his officer had with Jack's arrival was gone. His eyes were wary.
"Want to tell me what Seth Kendrick was doing here?"
The corner of Freeman's eye twitched.
"We were working out."
"I thought you were sick."
"I'm feeling better."
"After your workout?"
"He left."
"No, he didn't."
"We played Assassin's Creed for a bit."
Jack placed the glass on the table.
"Don't lie to me, Mike."
"I'm not."
Jack leaned forward and sniffed.
"You smell like sex."
Jack was ready for him when he lunged. Jack stepped aside, wrenched Freeman's arm behind his back, and shoved him face down onto the table. Big guys always overestimated themselves. Freeman yelled, his cheek splitting as it hit the gun pieces.
"How long have you been fucking Seth Kendrick?"
"It's not like that."
"Really? 'Cause that's what it sounded like."
"You really should keep your window closed."
Jack twisted Freeman's arm farther up his back.
"We aren't doing anything wrong."
"Really?
He's 18.
He's a kid.
His mother held him back a year. He's been 18 for months."
"Oh, lucky for you. Why didn't you come to work today?"
"I didn't feel good."
Jack wrenched his arm.
Bullshit! Okay! Pollard asked me to call in.
Why?
He wanted to run you around town on a bunch of fake calls.
Why?
I don't know. I didn't ask.
Why would you do what he said? Freeman didn't respond. Jack brought his knee up between his legs. Freeman's legs buckled and he groaned.
Let me tell you what I think, Jack said.
I think Pollard found out about you and that boy and threatened to expose you.
He's not a boy,
Freeman croaked.
He pursued me.
Jack leaned down close to Freeman's ear.
I don't fucking care. I don't care if you like men. I don't even care if you are fucking Seth, as long as it's consensual, and believe me, I'll find out. What I do care about is the fact you've been working against me for Pollard.
I haven't. Just today.
Jack slapped cuffs on Freeman, stood him up, and pushed him down into a chair. Blood ran down his cheek. He hunched over in the chair, still in pain from being kneed in the balls. Jack pulled a chair out, slammed it down in front of Freeman, and sat down.
Here's the deal, Jack said.
I know.
He spread his hands and leaned back in the chair.
You bought a Beretta from Justin Dixon. You killed Gilberto and Rosa.
Freeman looked up.
Crime scene called today. There was a partial print on the inside of the slide assembly.
Freeman shook his head and looked down.
Now, I can fill in the blanks through guesswork and supposition, but if I hear it from you, I'll put in a good word with the DA.
He remained silent, staring at the ground.
Okay. Here's the story I'm going to tell. Seth Kendrick killed Gilberto and Rosa in a drug deal that went bad.
Freeman's head shot up at Seth's name.
Oh, did I forget to tell you? It was Seth's print on the inside of the gun.
That's not possible.
Sure it is.
He never...
Freeman caught himself.
His wouldn't be in the system.
He would if his mother had him printed when he was a kid. My wife printed my son, in case he ever got abducted.
Jack laughed. These helicopter moms. Freeman was breathing heavily, his face pale.
When I leave here, I'm going to Kelly Kendrick's house to arrest Seth. My guess is he won't have an alibi for the murder. He was probably at home in bed, but kids sneak out all the time. He might beat the charge. It'll be tough for the DA to find a motive, but his life will be ruined. He can say bye-bye to a football scholarship. He's young, good-looking, fit. He'll be real popular in Huntsville.
Okay. Enough,
Freeman exhaled.
I killed them.
Why? Did Rosa clean your house?
What? No.
Then what?
Pollard put me up to it.
Pollard?
Jack wasn't expecting that answer.
Why?
I don't know. I didn't ask.
Someone asks you to murder two people and you don't ask why? Freeman wouldn't look at Jack.
Why would you agree to it?
Freeman closed his eyes.
Pollard caught us, me and Seth, up at the German church.
When?
June.
Were you on duty?
Yes.
Go on.
He never came out and said he would expose us, but it was there, you know? The threat, the promise to keep it secret in exchange for a future favor. I never imagined what it would be.
Freeman's eyes were red.
You did it to protect Seth, his future.
He nodded.
What exactly did Pollard tell you to do?
Make it look like a double murder. Plant some drugs. I decided to make it look like a murder-suicide. Didn't figure there would be much investigation, and if there was, I could manipulate it.
Did you plant drugs?
Yes. Coke, meth.
Where?
In the dresser. It was gone when I took pictures.
Jack pulled a handkerchief from his pocket and gave it to Freeman.
Pollard must not have been happy when you changed the plan.
Not really.
Freeman pressed the cloth to his cheek.
Any idea why Pollard wanted them dead?
No.
Did Pollard ask you to search the house for anything?
Freeman looked at the blood on the handkerchief, folded it in half, and pressed it to his face again.
No. Like what?
If Pollard didn't send Freeman to find something that would tie him to the Ramoses, then why did he want them dead?
"Did someone ask Pollard to have these people killed?" Jack said.
"But Pollard told me to kill them and plant drugs. That's it."
Jack stood and pushed his chair under the table.
"Come on, you're going to tell me this story on camera at the station."
Jack grabbed Freeman's arm and jerked him out of his seat. Freeman tried to jerk away, but Jack tightened his grip.
"How did you know about me and Seth?"
"My son took a picture of your cruiser and Seth's Jeep up at the church. I didn't think much about it until I came over here tonight to check on my sick officer. The rest was just supposition and guessing. Thanks for filling in the blanks. By the way, did you harass my son?"
"Pollard told me to."
Jack slammed Freeman's face down onto the table again. He screamed.
"Oh, did you trip, Mike? You need to be more careful."
"Asshole,"
Freeman said between gritted teeth. Jack jerked him up into a standing position again. He put his mouth next to Freeman's ear and said with barely controlled rage, "You confess to everything and implicate Pollard, and I'll keep Seth's name out of all of this. But if you even think about changing your story, I will fucking destroy Seth Kendrick's life."
"You wouldn't."
"Maybe. Maybe not. But do you want to take that chance?"
Chapter 7. Wednesday. 1. Ellie's apartment was dark, save the bluish glow from her computer and a small desk lamp. The clock in the top right corner of her screen said 1:57 a.m. 3 minutes, then to bed. She meant it this time. She paused, listened. Was that a knock? She jumped when she heard it again, louder. She stared at the door, heard the knock again, and rose. She pulled her sweater tight across her chest and stood next to the door.
"Who is it?"
"Jack."
She exhaled with relief, unbolted the lock, and opened the door. Jack leaned on the door jamb, pale, exhausted. The bruise around his eye looked worse than when it was fresh and swollen.
"What's wrong?"
she asked. His smile was wan.
"Nothing, now. Can I come in?"
Ellie looked into her darkened, empty apartment.
"Sure."
He walked in and she closed the door. He stood a few feet from the door, looking around. She turned on a floor lamp, walked to her desk, and closed her laptop.
"I saw the light," Jack explained.
"Insomnia,"
she said with a shrug.
"You too?"
"For as long as I can remember."
"Same."
"Want a drink? Beer? Wine?"
"Beer."
She pulled a beer out of the refrigerator, popped the cap, and poured herself a glass of red wine. Jack put his handheld radio on the coffee table and sat on the couch. She walked around the island and handed him the beer.
"Are you still on duty?"
She settled down into the opposite corner of the couch, tucking one leg beneath her, and faced him. He drank his beer, sighed, smiled, and looked at the label.
"Yes."
He turned to her.
"It's been a hell of a day."
She sipped her wine.
"Want to talk about it?"
He rested the beer bottle on his thigh.
Maybe later." "I like your place."
"Thanks."
"Did Kelly help you?"
"No. Brian put the kitchen and bathroom in for me."
They drank in comfortable silence. Ellie stared at her wine and waited. She knew whatever Jack came here for would come out in time. If it didn't, she wouldn't mind. She enjoyed being near him. It was the first time they had been truly alone. She shifted on the couch at the realization.
"I heard my brother came to see you."
"He did."
"He likes you."
"Does he?"
Jack drank his beer.
"So you called a couple of times. Sorry I didn't call you back."
"That's okay,"
she said quickly.
"I called Miner."
"Miner?"
"About Claire Dodsworth."
"Oh,"
he said.
"What?"
She nudged his leg with her foot.
"Are you disappointed?"
Never thought I'd say it, but I'm jealous of Miner, he said with a mischievous smile.
As well you should be, she said.
His eyes lingered on hers for a moment before his smile fell, and he said,
What about Claire Dodsworth?
She told him about trying to question Walt Dixon.
I tried to get information out of him, but he caught me out.
Walt Dixon?
That's whose cows I was herding when you called.
I would have liked to see that.
I stepped in a cow, Patty. Everyone got a big kick out of it.
Jack finished his beer, put the empty bottle on the coffee table, and sat back. He settled further into the couch and leaned his head back.
How was your first day of business?
Good. Very good. Busy.
Jack rested his hand, palm up, on the cushion between them. Ellie shifted her wine glass to her left hand and took it. He looked at her.
Sorry I couldn't come by.
That's okay. I know you were busy.
Jack ran his thumb along her forefinger, smiled.
You have really long fingers.
Freakishly long.
I wouldn't say freakish. You play piano?
Not very well, much to Mrs. Hennessy's dismay.
He continued to run his thumb along her hand.
What Ethan said last night wasn't true.
What's that?
She asked, though her stomach lurched. She had been obsessing over it all day and felt hypocritical for it. She'd been with plenty of other men. It was just difficult being slut-shamed by a teenager.
I guess Julie told him I cheated on her, which I didn't, not once, though God knows I had enough chances.
You don't have to explain.
Yeah, I do.
He lifted her hand and kissed the back of it.
I have a question.
She waited.
You don't have to answer.
Uh-oh.
Jack smiled, shifted closer to her on the couch, and turned to face her.
Did your husband cheat on you?
Ellie nodded.
With a lot of women?
She nodded again.
That's why you were so upset with me.
That's part of it.
What's the other part?
She released his hand, placed her wine glass on the table, and stood. She grabbed another beer from the refrigerator and the bottle of wine and returned to the couch. Jack opened his beer and she poured more wine. She sipped the dry red wine, letting it slide down her throat and soothe her. She met Jack's eyes levelly.
I don't like scandal.
Who does?
My life has been one scandal after another.
Really?
Disbelief was as clear in his voice as his expression.
Jinx was the final straw.
Jinx?
My ex-husband.
Ellie knew what was coming. She'd heard it enough. Jack grinned at the absurdity of it.
His name was Jinx?
Yes. Should have been my first clue, huh? I was young and apparently easily swept off my feet. Dad loved him, another red flag I ignored. Married within 3 months of meeting.
Julie and I were married in 6.
Then you understand.
He nodded. Unfortunately.
You know, I could have survived the cheating. Might have tried to make it work. But it was all a lie. Everything.
She took a deep breath, tried to decide how to tell Jack what happened as briefly as possible and somehow retain a bit of his respect and her pride. She wasn't sure it was possible.
Jinx married me for my money, my property.
People keep saying you're the richest woman in town.
That's an exaggeration. I have enough, but more importantly, I had what my dad wanted and thought was his. He and Jinx tried to con me out of everything. Jinx was very good. It took me years to realize who he really was, what his game was, and that my father was at the center of it.
Your father?
She sipped her wine.
Oh, his hatred for me is legendary. It's one of the reasons I'm so well-liked. Say what you want about Stillwater, but there is a deep well of pity in this town that I still benefit from.
Why does he hate you?
Hated. He's dead.
She drank and gestured with her glass as she said,
Really, there are too many reasons, and I don't particularly want to go into it. his biggest point of contention was that my mother left me all the property and money instead of him. He spent the last 30 years of his life trying to get it away from me. Jinx was his best hope. The idea was Jinx would marry me, and when I turned 25, I would turn everything over to him. Why would you do that? My father thought I was an idiot, and desperate for a man to love me. He thought Jinx, with all of his charms and manipulation, could do the rest. He almost did. She shook her head. Thank God I'm not a total idiot, but mostly I have Jane to thank. She never liked Jinx, though I didn't know that until the end. She knew if she railed against Jinx, it would only alienate me. Instead, she embraced Jinx. I was a little jealous, to be honest. She had never shown me an ounce of affection, and there she was, practically fawning over my husband. Jack laughed and just caught the dribble of beer falling from his chin.
Jane Maxwell, fawning?
I know, right? Jinx was clever and manipulative, but he wasn't smart. Had absolutely no business sense. Jane made him believe he did. Kept helping him get set up in businesses that inevitably failed. But it kept him distracted from his original goal, fleecing me. My father wasn't nearly as good at the long game as Jinx. He drank too much, and when he did, his real feelings for me would come through.
She stared into her wine glass, wishing there were a way to drown out the memories of her father once and for all. She knew better. She had tried more than once, but the next morning she was always left with a raging headache, sandpaper tongue, and mortification at her weakness. The memories were more manageable and, surprisingly, less painful when she was in control. She looked at Jack and smiled thinly.
My father could be cruel. Jinx was livid when Big Jake got on a roll about how worthless I was, or at least Jinx seemed to be. At the time, though, I was just happy to have someone on my side, someone who loved me. I would have given it all over without a word of complaint.
Why didn't you?
I'd like to be able to say I started suspecting something was off, but that's not it.
She closed her eyes.
I was obsessed with trying to get pregnant. I had hardly any other thought in my mind. Kelly had Seth. Susan had Paige. Everyone I knew was having babies. I was desperate and still ridiculously in love. When Susan had Troy and Olivia, one right after the other, I went off the deep end. Fertility tests showed there was nothing wrong with either of us. Of course, he was cheating on his tests, I learned later.
She waved her hand in dismissal of the details. She hardly wanted to relive it.
He went along with trying for a long while, always very subtly implying the problem must be with me, that I was somehow the failure. You can imagine having sex became a chore, lost all of its appeal. Instead of having more, we had less. Well, I had less anyway. He still had plenty with women all over the county. How I didn't know is a miracle. I guess I was determined to ignore the signs. Jinx made the mistake of screwing a woman who hated me more than she liked Jinx. She couldn't help but tell me about their relationship, if you could even call it that. She twisted the knife a little too far, told me trying to get pregnant was futile. Turns out, Jinx had never wanted kids. Before we met, he had a vasectomy so he could cat around and not worry if the condom broke.
Ellie stopped. She hadn't meant to tell him all of this. She picked at the drawstring of her pajama pants, all the shame rushing back.
Jesus, it's no wonder you think men are more trouble than they're worth.
Her head shot up.
Who said that?
Shirley. The first day we met. Ellie nodded and smiled.
Sounds like Shirley. She wasn't shy in her hatred of Jinx. Strained our relationship until I came to my senses. She never judged me. Never said I told you so.
Ellie took a deep breath and laughed.
This is much longer than I intended, so, with a little help from my friends, I wised up, divorced Jinx. He ended up in the pen down in Huntsville not long after. Still there.
And your dad?
Hated me until the day he died.
She returned her attention to the drawstring. The town was pretty equally divided between pity for me and scorn for my stupidity. It was all quite the topic of conversation for months, until 9/11 came and one pathetic woman's inability to get pregnant and poor taste in men became less interesting than the threat of terrorists owning the Chevron. That's when I went to Dallas, got a job at Starbucks.
Which Starbucks?
West Village.
I went there all the time.
I probably made you a latte.
I would have noticed you, she chuckled.
I doubt it.
Jack set his empty beer bottle next to his first.
Is your bathroom over there?
He pointed to the right.
Yes.
When the bathroom door clicked closed, Ellie collapsed back on the sofa.
Why did she tell him all of that?
A 2- or 3-sentence explanation would have sufficed. Instead, she had told him most, if not all, of the sordid details. He couldn't leave fast enough. She rose, picked up the wine and bottles in one hand, her wine glass in the other. She tossed the empty bottles, corked the wine, and finished the rest of her glass in one long gulp. Shirley was right. She did think men were more trouble than they were worth. She hated this up and down, the uncertainty, the gut-wrenching disappointment. And wasn't that always how it ended? Why would this be any different? Maybe her dad had been right. Maybe there was something deep inside her that was repulsive to men. She rinsed the wine glass and was putting it in the dishwasher when Jack came out of the bathroom. She closed the dishwasher door, wiped her hands on a towel, and turned to face him, stealing her heart for his quick exit. He looked uncomfortable, surprised. He put his hands in his pockets.
It's getting late, he said.
The microwave clock said 2:48.
Yeah, morning comes early.
Ellie walked to the door. Jack walked to the coffee table and picked up his radio.
I have to go home and search for my video camera.
He stopped in front of her.
The camera at the station is at least 30 years old. It uses VHS tapes.
I guess Buck didn't have much use for it.
I'm thinking of selling it online as an antique. Use the money to buy a new computer. It's an antique, too.
He stepped closer.
You don't have a video camera I could borrow, do you? I really don't want to search through all those boxes.
No, sorry.
I've never needed one. No family, remember? She restrained herself from saying it and showing him how pathetic she truly was.
I only have the camera on my phone, she said instead.
She wondered why he needed a camera. Did he arrest someone for the Ramos murders? It was on the tip of her tongue to ask, but her desire for him to leave was greater than her curiosity.
Good idea, Jack said. I'd be searching until next year. I forgot to label the boxes.
Ellie laughed.
You didn't.
I did.
Their laughter died down and they stared at each other, the smiles slowly sliding from their faces.
Thanks for coming by, she said.
She put her hand on the doorknob.
There's one thing you said that bothers me. Just one?
She lifted her eyes from the loosened knot of his tie and met his squarely. She wasn't going to become a pathetic, whimpering mess just because another man was rejecting her. She could at least meet it with some dignity. It was about all she had left.
You aren't pathetic. Someone you loved betrayed you. Lord knows I can relate. All either of us were guilty of is being too trusting.
Has it ruined your ability to trust others?
He shook his head.
Did it ruin yours?
She nodded.
Do you trust me?
She lifted one shoulder in a half-hearted shrug.
I want to.
This was the moment to open the door without a word. He would leave, reluctant but resigned, understanding. There would be no potential for scandal or gossip, no chance of a long-lost wife returning to ruin her life, no broken heart, no happiness, no joy, no passion. She didn't open the door, and he didn't move. He didn't want to leave, and she didn't want him to. The kiss started slow, tentative, sensual. Ellie tried to focus her mind on what was happening, the feel of his lips and hands, the burning deep inside her. They would never get this moment back, the innocence of exploration and the thrill of the unknown. His face was flushed, his breathing labored, when he asked if he could stay. She threw the deadbolt. It happened quickly from there, the fumbling with clothes between kisses, giggling at all of the shit Jack had to take off, his gun, belt, all the goddamn buttons on his shirt, uncooperative socks. She pushed him down onto the couch and straddled him. His hands ran up and down her back as she settled on him with a sigh. They laughed, dizzy with joy and the disbelief of where they were after so little time, and wonder at how it took so long. The mood changed suddenly, and she paused, overcome by the depth of feeling she saw in his eyes. He knew exactly why, and waited, patiently, while she enjoyed the feeling of him inside her. She believed they could have stayed there, filling each other forever. Everything about the moment was perfect. Too perfect to last. 2. Jack had just finished placing an online ad for a police officer when Miner walked into his office.
"What's Freeman doing in the holding cell?"
"Close the door," Jack said.
"Why? There ain't anyone left to overhear us."
"Close the door, Miner. Sit down." Miner obeyed.
"Freeman killed Rosa and Gilberto."
"What? That's ridiculous. He don't even know them."
"Buck Pollard had him do it."
"The hell he did."
"That surprises you?"
"Course it does."
Miner's usually laconic voice was rough with anger.
"Why would Buck want those two Mexicans dead? Better yet," he said,
looking at Jack as he became more confident in his idea,
"why would Freeman agree to do it?"
"Pollard had something on him Freeman didn't want exposed."
He waited for Miner's reaction and wasn't disappointed. Miner stared at the front of Jack's desk.
"That doesn't surprise you."
"Buck knew the secrets of everyone in town. I can't imagine Freeman's secret was so bad he'd kill for it."
"Freeman was fucking a high school senior."
Miner opened his mouth to say something. "A male high school senior." Miner clamped his mouth shut, shook his head.
"I don't believe it."
"Which part? That Freeman likes men? That he was fucking a kid? Or that Pollard used it against him?"
"Well, it's all pretty damn unbelievable. Who's the kid?"
Jack ground his teeth together.
"It doesn't matter. Freeman changed his story and asked for a lawyer."
"Then how do you—"
"I didn't Mirandize him when I initially questioned him. None of what he told me can be used, only his confession, which conveniently leaves out any mention of Pollard."
"But he confessed? On record?"
"Yes. I just placed a want ad for two police officers. You know what the most important qualification is?"
Miner looked at Jack, but didn't answer.
"To have absolutely no ties to Buck fucking Pollard."
Miner crossed his arms.
"I sense an accusation coming."
Jack smiled.
"You know what almost everyone I've met has said about you? That you were with Pollard the longest."
"Should have figured that out for yourself by reading my file."
"You know what subtext is, Miner?"
"I ain't an idiot."
"No. But you sure don't want people to think you're as smart as you are. I wonder why that is."
Miner stayed silent.
"The subtext I've gotten with just about every word said about you is I shouldn't trust you, that you're Pollard's man."
"I ain't anybody's man but my own."
Jack looked at Miner with pity. That's not really true, is it? Believe what you want. I ain't done anything against you. You didn't sit on running Diego through the feds. You never asked me to do that. I told you that.
You didn't give me wrong directions to Buck's house, hoping he would leave town before I could talk to him.
Miner shifted in his chair. I drove those roads for 40 years without numbers on them. I don't look at the numbers because I know where I'm going. I offered to take you.
You didn't know Pollard told people to run me around town yesterday?
I was running around town too, don't forget. Jack opened a side drawer of his desk, took out a folder, and threw it on the desk in front of Miner.
Look familiar?
You been going through my desk?
That's what you're going with? Who's Patricia Hall?
No idea. Louisiana woman missing since 58.
Where did you get her information?
Buck gave it to me.
When?
Sunday.
Why?
To close the case. To keep us from finding out about Claire Dodsworth.
Why would Buck Pollard care if we ID'd the skeleton as Claire Dodsworth?
Like you said earlier, I don't know, but I got an idea. That's what I've been working on.
The intercom buzzed. It was Susan. Chief, is Miner in there?
Yes.
Walt Dixon's here to see him.
Thanks, Susan. Send him back,
Miner said.
When the intercom cut off, Miner arose. You can either help me or fire me. I don't give a damn which,
Miner said, walking out of the office to escort his witness back. Walt Dixon was tall, thin, stoop-shouldered, and bow-legged. A neatly trimmed gray beard and a head full of silver hair framed his leathery, weather-beaten face. His hair, just above his ears, was permanently creased from the cowboy hat he held in his hands.
Miner, Dixon said. Have a seat, Mr. Dixon.
Miner motioned for a chair in front of Jack's desk.
Have you met the new chief?
No.
Dixon stuck his hand out.
How do you do? Met your brother yesterday. He did something I've been trying to do for years. Beat J.B. Miller at 42.
No kidding,
Miner said, sounding impressed.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Dixon, Jack said.
He shook the man's hand.
Please sit down.
Dixon sat and placed his hat on the desk. Miner sat in the chair next to him.
Mr. Dixon, did you know Claire Dodsworth?
Dixon rested his elbows on the arms of his chair and grasped his hands together.
Yeah, I knew her. Thought that might be why you called me down here, Miner.
Why's that?
Ellie asked me about her yesterday. Don't know how she knew anything about it.
Dixon shook his head.
I've been thinking about Claire ever since. It's been years since I thought of her.
He looked between Miner and Jack.
That's her bones you found, isn't it?
Miner spoke up.
We think so, yes. We're trying to figure what happened to her. We probably won't know specifically. Too many people are gone from that time, but whatever you can tell us will sure help.
Dixon nodded.
Well, I'm happy to help. As long as my wife don't find out. She was none too happy to find out about my experiences with Claire Dodsworth. Don't want to open that old wound.
Of course not, Jack said.
Well, the first thing you need to know about Claire was she liked her men young and inexperienced. She took the virginity of just about every halfway decent-looking boy in my class, and a fair few of the ugly ones. Once we got a little experience and started trying to take charge a little bit, she lost interest, moved on to the next virgin. After a while, we got smart. Just let her have her way with us. Oh, we were willing, don't get me wrong.
How old were you?
15, 16.
He shook his head.
If something like that happened now, she'd be thrown in jail and the key would be melted.
Jack thought of Ethan, a year older, being taught about sex by a 20-something-year-old mother. His stomach churned.
Then she lost interest. None of us heard from her for weeks. No one saw her or her car around town. Old man Dodsworth hired Elizabeth to take care of his daughter and said he and Claire got a divorce. I don't know where the Fuller Brush salesman rumor started. It ain't true, anyway.
How do you know?
She told me when she came back in town. It was the end of 61, Christmas Eve, as a matter of fact. I was 17 then. My girlfriend and her family were at my parents' house celebrating. I was just getting ready to announce our engagement when the doorbell rings. I answer it, and it's Claire Dodsworth, beat all to hell. Bruised face, split lip, broken arm. Her eye looked like yours, healing, but worse looking because of it. She'd just come in on the bus and needed a ride out to Dodsworth's place. It was mighty cold that night, and she didn't have a coat. Didn't have anything with her save a purse, come to think of it. Huh.
Dixon stared into space.
Never thought of that before. Well, she begged me to help her. Well, Jeanette came to the door, saw her, and had a pretty good idea why Claire came to me.
The breath he blew out whistled through his front teeth.
Almost ended my engagement, let me tell you. I had to help Claire, though. She looked just awful. I got Jeanette back in the house somehow. Told Claire if she wanted my help, she would have to wait. She hid in the garage until everyone left. It was midnight before I could sneak out to help her. All she wanted was a ride home. She took the bus to Stillwater, see? Sold her car months before for money. The man she ran off with was the man she was with before Dodsworth. He's the one who beat her up. She got away from him somehow. She was full of remorse, wanted her life back, to see her little girl. So I took her home.
To Dodsworth's house? Miner asked. Dixon nodded.
I drove off when the front porch light came on. That's the last I ever saw of her.
You didn't wonder what happened to her?
He shook his head.
You got to remember, I was young, in love, and afraid I was about to lose Jeanette. I was terrified we'd see Claire around town. It was weeks before I wondered what happened to her. By that time, I was just so glad she was out of town, I didn't give it much thought. No one else said a word about seeing her. Oh, it gave me a thrill to think that of all the boys she was with, I was the one she thought of for help. Boy, was I young and stupid.
Why do you say that? Miner asked.
My house was one of the closest to the bus stop. I was probably the first one she found home.
Dixon spread his hands, placed them on the arms of his chair, and stood.
That's it, boys. That's all I know.
Did you go straight home? Miner asked. After you dropped Claire off?
Dixon pursed his lips.
Come to think of it, no, I didn't. Me, Joe Underwood, and Buck celebrated my engagement with a bottle of moonshine Buck got from his granddaddy. Boy, was I hungover the next day. I had a hell of a time hiding that from Jeanette.
Jack didn't think Jeanette would be fun to be married to.
Buck and Joe were leaving for the army the first of the year. We spent every night that holiday raising hell.
Dixon shook his head.
Poor Joe. He was a POW, you know. Died in captivity. Damn shame. Great guy.
That night, Christmas Eve, did you tell Joe and Buck about Claire? Miner asked.
I imagine I did. She was a favorite topic of conversation among us. We liked to compare notes. I ain't proud of it, but we were young and stupid.
Dixon looked at them with a twinkle in his eye.
And Claire Dodsworth was one great lay.
Thanks, Mr. Dixon, Miner said. He started to walk Dixon out of the office.
One more thing, Jack said.
You and Buck still close?
Not so much, no. He was different when he came back from Vietnam.
Different how? Dixon shrugged.
Well, we just didn't have anything in common anymore. I had a family, a farm to run. Just drifted apart.
Jack nodded. Ever figure out how your cows got out yesterday?
As far as I can tell, someone opened the gate.
Any idea who would do that?
Probably some kid on a dare.
Dixon put his hat on and left. Jack walked around his desk and sat down in his chair. Miner stood near the door, feet planted apart, hands on his hips. Jack lifted the phone from the cradle.
What?
We're not done. Miner, I've got a confessed murderer downstairs who needs to be transported to county. He ain't going anywhere. After all the shit you accused me of, you're out of your mind if you think I'm conducting this next interview without you. We're closing this case today. Together. He walked out of the office.
Christ.
Jack hung up the phone, took his radio from the corner of the desk, and followed. 3. Miner led Jack through the nursing home without a glance at his father or his cronies, without a comment to Priscilla at the nurse's station. He stopped at Elizabeth Dodsworth's door.
Barbara visits her every Wednesday morning.
They walked in. Barbara sat in a chair on the far side of the bed, staring out the window. Elizabeth Dodsworth looked exactly as Miner had left her 24 hours before. Barbara turned, startled.
Miner?
She looked between him and the chief.
What are you doing here? I told you she can't talk to you.
We know that, Barbara. We want to talk to you.
She looked back out the window.
I have nothing to say.
I think you do, Barb.
Miner crouched down in front of her. If he looked hard enough, he could see the little girl he had a crush on in third grade. It was too easy to see the loose teenager she became. He thought of the time she snuck him into Jacob York's house and how mortifying it had been to be caught by a 7-year-old Ellie holding a Raggedy Ann doll. Miner gently touched Barbara's knee.
Don't, Miner. It don't matter anymore. Hasn't mattered for a long time.
She looked over her shoulder at Jack.
What are you doing skulking around back there? Ain't you ever seen a comatose woman before? She's been like that ever since they found her in your Polly's bed, Barbara said. Kinda ironic, ain't it, Miner?
Yes, it is.
Barbara stared at her stepmother.
I wish I could say she was a good mother, but I can't. She tried, but she wasn't ever there, you know. Always lost in thought somewhere. Guess now we know where, don't we?
The woods behind your house, Miner said.
She shrugged.
Do you remember anything at all? About Claire?
She shook her head.
Nah, not really. What is real and what is just things I piece together until I think they're real?
What do you remember?
She smiled.
Did you know my favorite color is yellow?
Sure, I remember.
You remember everything.
She looked back at Jack.
He was the best boyfriend I ever had.
Jack looked away.
You're my biggest regret, Miner.
Don't say that, Barb.
It's true. If I hadn't fucked everything up with you, we'd be married right now. Probably have a couple of kids. Hell, we might even be grandparents.
She laughed. Her smile faded as she looked out the window.
I wasn't good enough for you, for anyone. He made sure of that.
Who, Barb? Your father? She jerked her head around.
My father? No, he didn't care enough about me one way or another.
Well, that's not true. I reminded him too much of my mom, I think. Probably thought I deserved everything I got. He was more concerned with saving his own hide.
Or maybe hers. She spat the word toward the woman in the bed. I guess we'll never know.
I don't understand, Barb.
Oh, he's done plenty to help me out of all the trouble I've gotten in over the years. That's for sure. I doubt it's out of any sort of guilt, though. He's the one who made me who I am, who's ruined my life. That man don't feel pain, guilt, regret, remorse.
Minor looked at Jack, who had moved forward into the room. Minor kept his eyes on Jack when he asked the next question.
You're talking about Buck, aren't you? What did he do to you, Barb?
Jack's surprise was worth it. Minor felt Barbara's eyes on him.
You caught us one time, didn't you?
Minor nodded.
I thought so. I never told him. You gotta believe me.
I do.
It had been his own stupidity that had let Buck Pollard know Minor knew his secret.
The first time I was 10, she said.
Her voice was clear, resigned.
Buck was new on the force, back from Vietnam a few years, war hero. I saw him at Daddy's dealership. Daddy gave him a car every 5 years, free. Didn't do that for anyone else, only Buck. Hard to believe, but he was handsome. A rogue for sure. Wore his hat at a cocky angle. Hard not to notice. He noticed me, too. He took to visiting us at night. Brought me little presents. Oh, I was in love for sure. One night he came to the house my parents left. Said he was going to babysit me. Well, I was thrilled. He was much better than smelly old Mrs. Robinson.
She sighed.
He brought me along slow.
Out of the corner of his eye, Minor saw Jack turn away. Minor kept his eyes on Barbara, even though he wanted to cry. Barbara sniffed, regained her composure.
It went on for years. I would do anything he asked. Pictures.
She looked Minor in the eye.
Oh, he loved taking pictures of me. Then when I got too old, I guess I was about 13, 14,
and she snapped her fingers.
Just like that. I was devastated. See, I thought we were really in love. I threatened to tell on